welcome to Wanderlust, a podcast about travel. I am your host, Lauren. In each episode, we'll meet a traveler, learn more about them, and something they're passionate about. I hope you enjoy this journey with me. Today, we are joined by Jessica, writer of the Guac and Roll in Seoul blog. She graduated with her master's at 22 and has been an expat for over 5 years. She teaches English as a second language in Seoul, South Korea. Let's get to know her better.
What got you interested in travel?
You know, whenever you really meet a long-term expat, it's never as simple as wanting to see the world or, you know, try something new. It's always got a deeper root to that, right? And yes. Hearing someone's real expat story as opposed to a backpacker story, it's probably some of the best story you'll ever hear in your life. My story was when I was 18 years old, I had grown up outside of New York City, and my parents thought it would be a fun, interesting coming-of-age experiment to make me live in the countryside all by myself in a very religious, tiny school. And that didn't work so well with me at 18. I felt very alone and very lost. And I made friends with a girl who was part of this major I'd never heard of called Peace and Global Studies. And she said if you signed up for it, you could leave the school and you could move abroad. So I actually just signed up for this extra degree on a whim, just a somewhat kind of a youthful rebellion. I was going to move to Beijing to retaliate against my parents. And I actually ended up moving to Prague, Czech Republic, or Czechia, as it's called now, for a semester abroad. Like most people who have studied abroad, you know, the travel bug, you catch it, it doesn't ever fully heal. To a degree, the central block was as far as I'd be allowed to go. It had a program straight through my college. And also, when I went there, I met other people that I resonated with. I guess that's a really important part of being an expat. When you are kind of forced to be different or live in a different area, like I was in college, and you feel isolated and alone, you meet these really interesting people when you live in a foreign country, and that's how you kind of bond. It's a connection you forge with each other. So that's what happened to me in Czechia, and I still, to this day, 10 years later, I'm still acquaintances with one of the girls I connected with. She travels all over the world, working for nonprofits and such. I got my master's degree at 22 years old. My parents, they have this belief of like, pull yourself up from the bootstraps. There were all these qualifications. If I did this or if I did that, I could come back to my nice life outside of New York and I could have all my friends, and my mom would help me with great professional networking opportunities. So I was really eager for that. And the final milestone was if I got my master's degree, they would have this big celebration and I could move home. I'm sure you can imagine that's not what happened. I'm not done with travel. I want to try this. I want to try Asia. I finally got a cubicle job that was pretty good, but the pay wasn't great. You know, it was great people, no stress, but I didn't come all that way for nothing. So eventually I signed up, and a boyfriend and I did not come to Korea alone. We decided to take the plunge to move to outside of Seoul together in 2015. And that is how I got to Asia. They flew me over. I remember being on the airplane. I actually cried. I thought it was the craziest thing I ever did. Like who does this, right? Like, There's a black van that picked me up. I'll never forget this. This Korean hajashi. And he's swearing on the highway, driving all sorts of who knows how fast. I'm holding on to this boyfriend I had in my 20s. Oh my gosh, what am I doing? What have I done? I have no idea where I'm being driven to. They take us to this fifth floor of this building, where they take us to a circle of other foreigners. Like, here's your new friends. Here you go. It was kind of the craziest thing I've ever done, but I fell in love with Korea. I love living here. I don't see myself being here for the rest of my life. It hasn't been a perfect 5 years, I can tell you that much. But there's a lot of good in it. It's a great place to live. It's a great place to also find out who you really are.
What's your favorite part of traveling?
Pick one or two things you really have your sights set on, and you let people just guide you along the way. If that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
Just of any country I've been to, the best experiences I've had, you know, just honestly saying, hey, hotel, hey, hostel, where's a good place just to explore that's safe? Just point me left, right, straight, you know, and they do. And you just stumble upon, you know, you stumble upon things. I would say hostel culture, the people you meet. That's incredible. I've met some of the greatest people of my life from hostels that I still talk to. I went hiking on my first giant mountain in South Korea because of a stranger I talked to on a beach in Thailand. He ended up flying here just touring the world. And we did, I'm horrible with Korean pronunciation, but Baekgunde. It's my first mountain I ever hiked, and I hiked that one.
That's impressive. Are you going to hike the one on Jeju?
One day I plan to. That would be really fun.
Mount Hollisan, I believe it's called. It's the volcanic mountain that is at the heart of Jeju Island. It's supposed to be gorgeous.
The thing with travel anywhere or living abroad is, you know, have a couple ideas of what you want to do and just let it happen. That's the thing with the friends, these connections you make. Who would it, like you and I, who would have thought we would have met the way we did? You know, that's just what life is all about. And I think travel allows you to have that come together that wouldn't be so easy to in many places of the States.
Because you already have some connections or like some things in common. You're not home.
Yeah.
Do you have any travel advice for others? Tips or tricks?
Whatever you do, don't brush your teeth using the tap water or any kind of water from Koh Rong, Cambodia. Don't do that. I lost 10 pounds that way.
But seriously,
all things aside, the world, you know, do exercise, you know, precautions, but the world isn't as scary and hostile as people may make it sound to be. Do be wary of where you eat your food. That something I've actually done when I've traveled, ever since getting sick in Cambodia, is discreetly look at the back of the house at a restaurant. That's probably the biggest travel thing I've seen. It saved me a lot of tummy aches. Look at the sink, look at the floor, you know, you can really see your food's being prepared. And honestly, just go up and talk to people. Like, if you find another traveler, just walk up to them and say hi. You know, I've made so many friends that way. You know, I've done so many excursions with just random people just by saying, hey, how's it going? And that's travel. It's about the site, sure, but travel really and life, it's about the people and the connections you make with others.
Very true. I've met some very cool people from traveling. What is something that you cannot travel without?
My mom bought me this thing. I have a Kindle. That's my one bougie item, my dilapidated Kindle. And she bought me this flexible light for the Kindle because it's the Paperwhite Kindle. So the kind you can read outdoors.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, that flexible light has done so much good for me. I just traveled the bare basics in a backpack. You know, in Asia, if you're from a Western country, bring deodorant. That's probably a good bet. You can buy most anything, anywhere, clothes, anything you need. Deodorant and a really good Kindle light. I know that sounds so crazy, but that Kindle light, I mean, Because seriously, you're in your hostel, you know, you need some unwinding time. Not all hostels are made equally. Some don't have like the nice overhead light. You have the Kindle Paperwhite. Get one of those little foldable things. It's probably like 10 bucks on Amazon. It's a great, great investment.
Yeah. Yeah. I love resting by reading.
Yeah.
Very calming. What would you say your biggest misadventure is?
Oh, here we go. In 2015, I, with the boyfriend that I traveled to South Korea, we thought it was going to be a great idea to go on Skyscanner and pick the cheapest flight for Chuseok, book it, grab a backpack, and just go rugged. Lonely Planet, which I'm not a huge fan of to this day. I do understand that they have their own duties to try to use more colorful words to spice a place up, but we ended up in the slums of Manila. And in 2015, being in the slums of Manila, they were all armed gunmen. And it was incredibly, incredibly dangerous. That was probably the worst life choice I ever made. And one day, I told my boyfriend at the time, I said, "Hey, I want to go to a market. You know, I think it would be cool if we went to like a fun market we could haggle." Like, for some reason, I was thinking more of like Thailand or Cambodia, like those markets. And on TripAdvisor, I found this market. It was not that kind of market. It was so dangerous, actually, that a police officer saw us, two foreigners, and literally saw us and just shoved us in the first cab possible. That was probably my biggest adventure. I had since returned to the Philippines in August. I went to Cebu, and it was a great experience. I mean, you know, years pass, you know, I was determined to give the Philippines a second chance. And I can tell you that I'm so glad I did. The people, I love them so much. They're just the kindest, warmest people. So hard work. They would do anything for you. I can understand Manila is not an ideal destination for many people, but people, please fly into Cebu. Give that country a chance. There's so much great in it, great opportunities.
Where is somewhere that you want to go back to?
Borneo.
Borneo.
Borneo, Malaysia. Some people have told me there's some areas of KL, or I've heard Penang can be suggestive at times. Malaysia is kind of an underdog. Same way I feel about Taiwan. Everyone, their knee-jerk reaction is Thailand, which is great. Thailand is wonderful. I've been twice, totally go. But Malaysia's great, at least where I've been in Borneo. Borneo, you're in the rainforest. Mm. It is incredibly safe being a female solo traveler. English is an official language. I can tell you from being there, there is zero funny business. I wouldn't say it's as safe as Seoul. I mean, you know, you are in Southeast Asia. Do, you know, proceed with caution where you go. But, you know, if I was walking from my hostel to just a local restaurant, a 20-minute walk at like 10 p.m., it's part of their culture. There's just no one's bothering you. They're very respectful people. I found it very easy to get where I needed to, either by public transportation or via Grab. I love, 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 love Borneo. No one even talks about poor Borneo. Malaysians are just oh my gosh, I love Malaysia. I'm a little biased. I think Malaysia and Taiwan are my two favorite Asian countries. I mean, I love Korea too. Sorry, Korea. But, Borneo, because I mean, it's got everything, right? It's got like the whole tropical vibe. It's got the whole rainforest nature. It's got incredible food. It's got curry. It's a great place to have fun, but it's not known for being too much of a party island, because, you know, alcohol, most people can't drink alcohol there since only Hindus can sell it, or Chinese, because Muslims don't drink alcohol. So for someone who's maybe more not into heavily drinking or partying like us, it's just like the perfect place with tons of daytime excursions. That was the best part of Borneo. that I felt that there was so much to do outside of worrying about a nightlife, that my day was just very rich and very filled.
I've been to Malaysia. I've not been to Borneo. Did Cameron Highlands, which I highly suggest. It's like in the middle of the main part of Malaysia. And it's also rainforesty. And yeah, you would like it. Please tell me about Hunter.
Hunter Barker. Okay. There is a distinct difference, I think we can all agree on, of how dogs are perceived in the West and how dogs are perceived here in Korea.
Yes. So Hunter Barker is a dog.
Yes. Yeah.
Korean Maltese, 3 kilograms.
No, it's just a regular show in Korea, for those who aren't aware. The typical dog is just this tiny little white thing with clothes. Most of them are in strollers, and you know, they're like little purse puppies. Mm-hmm. The culture here is very different as opposed to the West. Small dogs can be popular, but usually bigger dogs are seen as better
in the West.
And retrievers, like the All-American, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When we think of American dogs, you know, the all around, he's the golden retriever. He's on a hike with you. He's running with you on the beach. You know, we tend in the States to like our dogs to be a little more rugged or more willing to be with us in the outdoors.
Right.
We also have a lot more space. So dogs here are very, very small. And in shelters in the United States, it's very common for dogs to be older, have a disability, be too large, or be a bully breed, right? Kind of one of the undesirable breeds that have been tainted and wrongfully so. But in Korea, an animal shelter is very different. A lot of the animals you'll see are these cute little puppies. Or these cute small dogs. There's nothing wrong with them. They're very young. It almost appears that my interpretation of it, it kind of reminds me of when I would go to the carnival as a child and like just get a goldfish and not really think about it.
Mm.
Makes sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would, you know, I'd get the goldfish and I'd put it in the plastic bowl, and he had a 5-day lifespan, as they do, you know. And it seems that in the States, not always, I don't want to generalize, but dogs are considered to be part of the family.
Mm, yeah.
And, you know, a dog is an investment for life. Or, you know, to death do us part, they're a family member, your best friend. And it's also, you know, that there's the whole phrase, adopt, don't shop, you know. It kind of raising awareness of, you know, give these dogs and shelters a second chance. Whereas in Korea, to me, it seems that that hasn't fully hit it here yet. A lot of these dogs seem that they have maybe have been presents. Maybe couples have bought one of these little puppies for someone and they realized it was just too much work. They didn't want it. They could have moved and just decided they didn't want to bring the dog with them. And this is the interesting part. I know this from firsthand experience. I know someone who works for the UK ASPCA.
And what's that?
So the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. So okay. I guess the UK version or whatever they call it. Made friends with someone who was coming over here back and forth as part of a rescue mission.
Oh.
And it's their job to go to these farms, these dog meat farms, and they jailbreak these dogs. And they ship them overseas to be pets. And I believe from what I understood is that they give a different incentive to the farmer. Because it's so easy to paint this as a black and white issue, but you know, a lot of these farmers, these are probably elderly people. This has been their, you know, it's a different culture. You know, it's easy to judge without knowing their story. We don't know for sure. But what these people would do is give them some kind of other method of farming or whatever to get out of the dog meat farming industry. But basically, I was shown a bunch of photos and videos of the dogs in their conditions. And it seems to be the stereotype that there's a certain dog for a dog meat in Korea. Like, there's a certain breed, but that is absolutely not true. A lot of the dogs are pets and little puppies, little pets, perfectly, like, they're not, they're domesticated, you know, could be your dog from next door. I went on Facebook and there was a girl and she volunteers for a pet shelter in Busan. And Hunter Barker was in there for a month. I hadn't gone to the shelter personally, but she posted an emergency post. Like, someone please take him. It was a kill shelter. They're going to euthanize him. He's free. You just need to pick him up. He has his shots. Come take the little guy. You know, he, at the time, he was between 1 and 2 years old. Just this tiny little white puppy. He just needed a home. I saw him. He became the light of my life. I woke up at, was it 5 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday? So yeah, I think I said yes to her on a Thursday. And I couldn't get I couldn't get him on a Saturday. I was like, I'm going to wake up at 5 o'clock on a Sunday, all the way from Seoul to Busan. I'm going to take the train, get the dog, and come back. And so I did. And I've had Hunter for almost 4 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, no. And he's a healthy little guy. You know, he's bilingual, actually. He understands both Korean and English. It's kind of a crazy thought, right? Like, you live overseas, why would you get a pet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you, well, what if you leave, right? What if you want to travel? That seems to be some very big questions people like to ask.
Well, let's get some answers for that. What do you do with Hunter Barker when you travel?
Well, I'm incredibly lucky that Hunter is the same. He's a popular Korean breed. It's a joke I have when I walk him down the street, even though I'm a foreigner, there's almost solidarity. You know, you almost do like a head nod with the Koreans because they also have their tiny little white puppies walking down the street. Oh. So you guys kind of understand each other. It's some good camaraderie. Because Hunter is so small. So for big dogs, I have no idea. It must be a lot harder. He's only 3 kilos. You can take him to any vet and he stays at a hotel. And the average cost would be about 20,000 won in Seoul. So maybe 17, 18 USD.
So like per night or for the entire trip?
No, per night. But you know, and he does not, contrary to what people worry about, he's not locked in a little cage. Again, he's also a small breed. There's also 10 other little small puppies just like him. They run around the vet, you know, so he's running free. He's getting attention. I've been doing it for years now. I also kind of like doing it because he's socializing. Well, he doesn't have friends because of his personality. He's more of a people puppy, but he is able to socialize. And so he goes to a hotel. And in the instance that I go home, he would come with me.
Have you looked into what that would entail to take him home?
I have. And it's apparently going to cost a lot of money. It's like close to $1,000. It's something like, because you have to get all sorts of paperwork done. He needs something called a pet passport. He has shots already. He has a bunch of vaccinations, but he needs a bunch more, I guess. So I don't know the full story of, I'm not going home in the near future. There's all sorts of courier services here. There's actually some that to encourage kind of rescuing some of these dogs that might be soup. Sorry, I'm not trying to sound crass. It's quite literally, they would become dog meat soup. You know, you would rescue the dog and you can, my cousin actually did it. Actually, she rescued a dog here from Korea and it was shipped over to New Jersey. It obviously is going to be more expensive than a dog in your home country, that I do know.
So you sort of answered it, but what is it like being a pet owner in Korea? Because I know probably like 10 years ago, and still, like, one of my coworkers had a dog and brought it to school, and all the students were scared to death of it. What would you say it's like being a pet owner in Korea?
That's so funny you mentioned that. It's mostly evolved. Where I'm living in my neighborhood in Seoul, it's very, I wouldn't say bougie, but it's definitely very kind of trendy-ish. It's a very nice area. And there's also a lot of people that have these kind of designer purse puppies. It's very common to see people with puppies and strollers, actually. That's something I see every day. So with people seeing the dog, at any time I walk him around the neighborhood, there's someone else walking their small dog. So that has definitely changed. However, I still notice that people do get more scared of dogs here a lot easier. For example, if he yips outside, I feel that in the United States, it would almost be the sound of a bird chirping, or no one would even think about it, right?
Yeah.
But people here will, and you know, they'll like kind of run. And so sometimes, you know, I've seen it from grown men before, and I'm like, he's 3 kilos with a leash and a harness. He can't. He actually can't, like I can pick him up with one arm. He can't do much. So yeah, no, it has changed a lot, but it is significantly different as compared to the States. Pets in the States are seen to be, you know, it almost seems like dogs here are more seen like people, but not treated as such. Like, you know, dressing up your dog. I've seen dog makeup, dog shoes. There's a variety of, there are so many grooming boutiques. So many dog pet clothes shops. So dog clothing stores are popular in my area. Strollers. So it's funny, for a country that the average Westerner might feel is very different to how we see dogs. Like in the States or Canada, we might see a dog as a family member. You know, like the dog, no questions asked. We would never get rid of the dog. It's a part of us, you know, but here it's actually treated like a baby. The sling, it's on the subway. It has a hat, a backpack.
You got Hunter for free by just like going and getting, but do you know how, if you were to get another dog, how does pet adoption work in Korea?
I would say, I think you have to pay like 50,000 won, so 50 US dollars around. I think it's a pretty cheap, it might be significantly cheaper. I do know for a fact that it's easy for foreigners to adopt.
Do you know of any ways to look about adopting a pet in Korea?
Facebook.
Mm.
Facebook, so, absolutely. That's how I found, you know, Hunter just popped up on a community I was a part of. And there's many Facebook community groups.
How is it having Hunter Barker?
Being an expat, while it's really interesting and it's really fun, you know, you get to live in this country, you know, it's so different from your own. You're in a city that literally has 1 million more people than New York City. That's how large it is. There is constantly something to do. You are never bored. And Seoul is so safe that you can do, I mean, so many things at all hours. Meaning, if I want to go for a walk at 10 p.m. at the lake around my house, well, I totally can because it's completely well lit and there's probably realistically 400 other people doing it too. So, you know, the safety, there's so many resources here, but it gets really lonely, right?
Yeah.
You have your expat friends, but they're constantly coming and going. And you're kind of also living in a state of it's constant transience. Is that the best way to describe it?
Yeah, it's a bit temporary feeling.
Everything is a little bit just constantly unstable. You never know who's going to be here next month, where you're going to be. You could be in one place for 5 years or one place for 5 days. You just don't know, which is a whole other story. But having a dog, I think, I'm back to the important part, was the best choice I ever made. For as crazy as it sounds, he's a permanent friend. For people that love dogs, he's so small. He's so easy. And in this country, you know, dogs aren't fully regarded like they are back home. It's easy to convince people, can my dog please live here with me? Look, he's so tiny. He's harmless. He couldn't make a mess if he tried. You know, in the instance he made an accident, it's very tiny. So having a dog in Korea, it's really great as a sense of companionship, right? You're never truly alone when you have a pet. And in times when you're maybe stressed out from, let's be honest, the long work hours, or even if it's not super long work hours, you're definitely earning your keep in this country. You're definitely putting good effort into your job. people don't realize that this isn't just a vacation. We have to work. Yeah. And we have to do a lot of it. And we have to do it at full capacity at all times, even if we don't feel well. You know, just kind of Korean work culture. And coming home to him, it's just the greatest feeling. Definitely a really great choice. To be honest, most people here would probably consider getting a cat before a dog. I've heard that's more popular. For the stereotype that cats are probably easier. As a dog person, I can tell you that you don't have to compromise in Korea with a dog.
So you're able to take care of your dog, work your full-time job, and travel.
Absolutely. My job is also a 7-minute walk from my apartment. As for most of us, you know, your company owns your housing or school if you work for the government. So it's obviously very easy and convenient to get to work. So I can go to work, come right home. It's a 7-minute walk. I can take him out. I'm right there with him. I can travel. I can put him right in the puppy hotel. You'd be surprised of how many, there are many 24-hour vet clinics in case of an emergency that a lot of veterinarians actually do know English. A lot of them have probably gone overseas for training. So that's something to keep in mind as well.
That's good to know, yeah.
There's a lot of, like my vet, I just stumbled in. My Korean's embarrassing, but I can speak it. And it turns out he spoke pretty good English. And, you know, we were able to establish a professional relationship. I was like, can I get Hunter registered here? You know, can I have him on file? All I needed to do was spend about $100 on getting him some vaccinations to get in his file. And he's good to go.
I hear him growling.
He is resource guarding right now. The problem with Hunter is he thinks he's a lot bigger than he really is. And yeah, he thinks he is the Incredible Hulk, and he doesn't like to hear no for an answer.
I was wondering if you'd be up for doing a quiz with me.
Sure.
Okay.
There's no math in this.
No. It's a travel-related quiz. I went on Rough Guides, which is sort of an alternative to Lonely.
So intrigued, because I think I, not even knowing this quiz was going to exist, shared that I do like I respect Lonely Planet, but I haven't always been in love with them.
This is one of their Where Should I Travel quizzes. So I'm going to give you some options. You tell me off the top of your head what you're interested in. So I'll ask the question, give you the options, go with your gut reaction.
Let's do this.
Where would you rather be? mountains and beaches, or cities and towns?
Mountains and beaches.
Where would you prefer to stay? A cabin up in the mountains? An Airbnb in a trendy neighborhood? A hotel in the city center, close to attractions? Or campground under the stars?
Campground under the stars.
How do you like to spend time on your travels? Finding the best local food and activities? Hiking, ziplining, surfing, kayaking? Visiting iconic sites steeped in history? Or wildlife spotting, taking in the natural scenery?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I just did ziplining and I'm literally hooked now. It was the coolest experience of my life. But I'm going to have to pick the first one. Just food. The little things, right? Just the wandering around, the cool little eateries pop up, the little bookshops, right? The everyday little trees, parks, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right. So your result, adventure. Some of these I don't know. So I apologize for mispronouncing places. Wadi Rum, Kyrgyzstan, or maybe, or Ireland Reeks District. So it says, these destinations will have your heart racing with Wadi Rum sand dunes in Jordan, are a playground with camel safaris and 4x4 excursions. Kyrgyzstan's treks to epic peaks, glaciers, and waterfalls. The Reeks District is home to Ireland's tallest mountain. Oh, no. Karuntu Hill, and the biking, driving, kayaking, and sailing around the area as well.
Oh, you're killing me.
Those seem like all places you would be interested in going. What is your dream trip?
Okay, I have two dream trips I have romanticized and dreamed about and am just literally obsessed with. I am secretly obsessed with all things Mediterranean and Greek. I would do anything, but I also know that the visions in my head are probably not the visions that I would see. I also want to go, I want to experience like all these stories I've heard. Like I want to experience like the 600 people on the bus with the music, like just... Mm. Just once before I die, I do want to do India.
Is there anything that you would like to promote?
I don't want to tell everybody to adopt a dog, obviously. Different strokes for different folks. But, you know, it's something near and dear to my heart. Something just to consider, you know, their situation. If you do want a dog, you know, try to go for a Korean one. I'm going to make the argument that the shelters here aren't as nice as shelters that might be back in the West. But yeah, I mean, again, adopting a dog has done a world of good, especially because a lot of times for however fun your life might be overseas, it can also be very solitary as well. And he's definitely saved my life.
Aww. All right. Well, thank you very much, Jessica.
No problem. It was so great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Have you adopted a pet while overseas or far from home? I'd love to meet your animal companions and introduce you to Hunter. Share them with me on Twitter @WanderlustPod. Until next time, dear travelers, thanks for listening.